The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Brian E. Lau, creator of Staunch Ambition, and you are listening to the PBD Cast by John Orwater. Or wait, Orlando? Yes, John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 241. I hope all is well with you, your friends, and your family, and I appreciate you checking out this episode. And this one is going to be certainly an interesting one because I have two guests joining me who are going to be talking about a lot of their projects, and those projects are very unique in their own right. And these guests, who are Damien and Helena of Art92, they are based in Birmingham, England. So we're going to talk about all of their projects. Damien currently has a Kickstarter campaign going on to fund a book called The Galaxy Grappling Alliance. Issue 2 is called Solar Slam. And he already had issue 1 out. And Galaxy Grappling Alliance, or GGA, is a mix of science fiction and professional wrestling. Damien is a huge wrestling fan, so we definitely talk about his fandom growing up as a kid, and world of sport, and who some of his favorite WWF wrestlers were and whatnot. But we also talk about another comic that Helena and Damien did called Pre-Mortis, which is a little bit of a horror comic. And Helena's got a great autobiographical comic called My Little Green Bike. And so we talk about that and a whole lot more. So I'm very, very thankful and appreciate the fact that Helena and Damien took some time out of their schedule to sit down and chat with me. And you know what? I'm going to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit. I'm going to be very honest. I spoke to them, Helena and Damien, for about 45 minutes after we wrapped our conversation for this podcast. They were just so sincere and so nice, and Damien and I had to talk about British wrestling, and as you'll hear in our conversation, we're even going to talk about podcasting, and like I said, it just overall was a fantastic, fantastic afternoon for me chatting with Damien and Helena, and I can't say enough good things about them. So excited to get to the episode, but before I do, I have a couple of things I need to let you know about real quick, and that, of course, is it's right about the time where I need to thank my great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics. As you know, World's Greatest Comics is the one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, comic book supplies, posters, back issues, toys, collectibles. They got it all. So stop on over to the store. It's located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, USA. Or you can find them online at www.wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics and check out the store. If you pick something up from them, let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast. I don't know why I felt the need to throw USA on there. I just I'm sure some of my avid listeners are going, John, are you gone completely mental? What? I don't know. I'm thinking that lots of international people are going to be listening now because, you know, Helena and Damien are on and they're representing the UK. Anyways, let's get back on track as I'm deviated from the game plan here. We need to also thank, of course, Redline Radio. As you know, every single Monday night at 9:30 p.m., you can hear the PVD Cast on Redline Radio. So just check out RedlineRadioLLC.com or find them on Facebook. Again, just search for Redline Radio LLC. Or better yet, if you're an Android phone user, go over to the Google Play Store, look for the Redline Radio LLC app. download it, and you can take the station with you wherever you go, and you can hear all the great shows and all the great music that Redline Radio gives to you. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to get off on a tangent again, so I'm gonna throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of this break, I'll be back to talk to Helena and Damien about all of their projects under the umbrella of Art 92. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I am so excited to be sitting down. Well, it's afternoon for me. It's evening for my guests, the two individuals behind Art 92 Comics, Helena and, of course, Damien. How are you guys doing?
We're really good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having us. We're really pleased to be here.
Yeah, we're good. It's hot at the moment. We're having a bit of a heat wave, so we're not used to it.
No, we're not.
In the north of England, it's a very hot day.
And probably you're stuck inside because of COVID-19, I imagine, as well.
Yes. And we don't have air conditioning, so we've got fans all over the house trying to cool us down. Yeah.
Which is okay until you're trying to draw, you know.
Yeah, because it blows all your paper away, yeah. Yeah.
Luckily, I do a lot of digital, so that helps in that sense. But the heat off the digital doesn't, so it's you can't win, basically. Yeah. You know?
If I remember my geography, northern part of the country is a little more temperate, isn't it? It doesn't get the extreme heat and extreme cold. Am I correct?
You're absolutely right. Which why it throws us, why we're not used to this kind of heat. You know, we tend to be, because we're just outside of Manchester. Mm-hmm. So when people say, oh, Manchester, it always rains in Manchester, doesn't it? That's the common kind of thing. And yeah, we do get a fair amount of rain, to be fair, but we're having a real long spell of hot weather we're having thunderstorms as well. But yeah, we it completely throws us, and everyone grinds to a halt and goes, oh, I can't work in this, it's too hot. We're just not used to it at all.
And we're actually based in a town called Wigan, which obviously your listeners will know or may not know. It's the home of the great, you know, the British Bulldogs, David Boy and Tommy Billington. So they actually trained at Riley's, which was the snake pit back in the day, in Wigan itself here. So yeah, so you know. So that accent that Davey Boy used to clip for the Americans, you know, he didn't sound like that when he came home. I tell you, he said he's more like this.
Man, that's awesome. That is a great story, Damien. Man, oh man. Well, let's talk about a project that, Damien, you are the artist and writer for. It's called the Galaxy Grappling Alliance. Could you maybe give the listeners a little bit of a summary of that project without giving away too much?
Yeah, so the premise of GGA is that it's set in the future. So it's set in 3221. And for around about 50 years, there's been this thing called the Piper Accord, which means that to stop wars and conflict going on around the galaxy, they actually resolve them by having a wrestling match. And there's a corporation, a huge corporation, that owns all of the wrestling rights. This might sound familiar, guys. And what they do is they set the matches up, they set the venues, they sell the tickets and broadcast it across the galaxy on pay-per-view. And it's got this kind of moral element to it, where in the first issue, it's around about sort of the fighting for the freedom of a particular sector of people who are imprisoned. And then, you know, so each issue will be around about, there's a kind of moral dilemma that's being resolved by a wrestling match rather than war.
Will each individual issue kind of be a self-contained storyline, or is there going to be some overarching stories that kind of connect them together? What's the structure like of the story?
Yeah, so it's both. I mean, I'm writing them as one-offs. However, there is connective tissue between all the issues. So some of the elements in issue one play into issue two and so forth. So I'm kind of trying to create it on that dual level. And because because we self-publish, it means that it takes us quite a while to get our projects out. So what we find when we're at conventions and things is that, you know, people prefer a standalone story. You know, you can tease them that there's a continuation, like with the end of issue one. But, you know, they like to have the main arc of the story to be kind of resolved within that issue, so that they don't feel that, you know, I may never create issue two, I may never create issue three, and you're going to be going, what if I never find out what happens? So I'm trying to do the two, really. And the idea of having it a broader arc running across several issues really appeals to me. I'm trying to do it a bit like the wrestling kind of booking itself, you know, where there are a longer, you know, there's a longer story that's sometimes playing out in the background, and matches pop out in between there to kind of help move it along.
You did mention the issue one, and I do want to, and I don't want to give anything away, but I do want to say that I felt that the ending of issue one was fantastic. I mean, that is clearly a little WWE-like storyline that goes on. I don't want to ruin it for folks. So I want them to go and check it out on their own, but I got to give you a tip of the hat. That was really good.
Yeah, thank you. And I tried to put nods in there for older fans like myself, but not do it in a way that was so on the nose that new people who maybe didn't get all of the little Easter eggs in there would feel that they were missing out, you know. So you'll recognize a lot of the types of characters that are within the issue. But if you don't, you know, I just hope people enjoy it for what it is. But yeah, I do have lots of these. I'm watching a lot of old wrestling. I'll be honest, I don't really watch much new stuff now. I just dip in and out. But I am still kind of, you know, going through all of the older stuff and like through the early and mid 80s up to the kind of mid 90s was my golden era, really. So I'm drawing from that and the things that stuck with me as a kid that still resonate today. You know, some of the storylines were fantastic at that time. You know, some were bonkers, obviously, but, you know, a lot of them were great, weren't they? You know.
So we talked off air that you are a huge wrestling fan, Damian. So could I ask, who are some of your favorite wrestlers to follow in your fandom?
Okay, so when I started, I followed British wrestling.
The old world of sport?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And, you know, I mean, that was dominated by a couple of big guys. One guy called Big Daddy that was, to be fair, should we say physically challenged? You know, I mean, he made Andre look like, you know, like Rey Mysterio. The guy couldn't, you know, he wasn't the greatest sort of wrestler, but he drew a crowd. You know, his size and things drew a crowd. And it helped that his brother actually ran the organization. So, of course, he got the push. And his opponent was always, his main nemesis was always this guy called Giant Haystacks, who he actually appeared in I think it was WCW in 97 for a brief spell. He kind of ended up in the ring with Hogan, and then he kind of came back thinking he was going to get invited back. And I don't know what happened, but they never gave him the call. But my hero of British wrestling was a guy called The Amazing Kung Fu. And he was just, because he represented everything you wanted to be. He was a small guy, but he was a superbly technical wrestler. And he actually trained for quite a while in the Hart's Dungeon. So he went over to Canada and lived there for a while, and he trained under Stu Hart. So, you know, he could wrestle, this guy. And he was a brilliant wrestler. And that kind of lasted until maybe the mid-80s, and then the WWF came over with the advent of satellite TV. You know, before then, we only had four channels, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And then when Sky TV came over and the satellites, they brought the WWF with them, and that was it then. I mean, the first time I saw that, I just thought, it's very much like the first time I saw the NFL on Channel 4 that we had here in 1983. And I just it just blew my mind. I was like, I'd never seen anything like that. You know, I'd never seen anything so colorful, so brash, loud, exciting. And the two things just, oh, mate, they just blew me out of the water, you know. And my two heroes from that period are, and the interchange, I mean, one of them is obviously Hot Rod. Yeah. You know, I love Roddy Piper. I absolutely adore everything about Roddy Piper. You know, his mic work, his in-ring work. The guy was just a genius, wasn't he? And Randy Savage was the other one. You know, just I think, you know, those two guys for me were just, they just epitomize everything I love about the sport, from the, you know, the bravado to the showmanship and the technical ability of Savage, and the, you know, the kind of charismatic style and that heel element that they both had just really, really appealed to me. So yeah, they'd be mine too.
Off air, Helena, you shared a wrestling story about somebody that you know. Would you mind retelling that story
for
the listeners?
Yeah, of course. So when I was growing up, one of my closest friends, I had no idea that her father was a professional wrestler. So I remember my mum, and we were watching World of Sport. And even though I wasn't a wrestling fan, we'd watch, you know, World of Sport. And I remember my mum saying to me one evening, she went, "You know who that is, don't you? Because he used to wrestle in a mask." And I went, I've got no idea. She went, that's Wendy's dad. And Wendy was my best friend. So it meant nothing to me. I just thought, oh, Wendy's dad is a professional wrestler who wore a mask for wrestling. And then he did get unmasked, you know, eventually. And he turned out to be a good looking guy with blonde hair and everyone fell for him. Anyway, when I first met Damien, one of the things that came up in conversation, as it does when you're getting to know your partner, he said he was a huge wrestling fan. I went, oh, right, you know. And he went, yeah, he said, I love the British wrestling. I said, oh, I said, Wendy's dad's a wrestler. And he went, oh, right, who is he? I went, it's the Amazing Kung Fu. And he went, oh, my God. And he went, gibbering wreck. And he went, he's one of my heroes. And I went, you're kidding me? And I said, it's just Wendy's dad. You know, you go around and he slaps you on the back and we have a barbecue. So I did say to Damien, I said, would you like to meet him? And he went, can I? I went, well, of course you can. So I took him round, introduced him. And like I said to you before off air, is that Ed, who is the Amazing Kung Fu, is from Belfast. And if any of your listeners have ever heard a Belfast accent, it is very, very strong and very difficult to understand. But of course, I grew up with him from when I was about two. So I totally understood every word he said. So poor Damien is sat there in a gibbering wreck because he's meeting his hero, didn't understand a word he was saying to him. So Ed would be talking and I'd have to translate to Damien. He's asking you this. He's asking you that. He's just asked you this. Yeah. Bless him. So it was this combination of, I think he'd gone slightly kind of deaf because he was so excited and the fact that he couldn't understand him. But then he subsequently later in life, obviously he, over the years, it's been like, you know, 28 years or something. He's become really good friends with him and he ended up giving him one of his wrestling suits as I think it was his 21st birthday present, which again, I think he took it out of the packet and put it straight back in again and has never done anything with it. So that's my claim to fame, my only wrestling claim to fame story.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, with GGA being number one being out, and we're going to talk about number two, it's coming out here, but Damien, have any wrestlers gotten their hands on GGA one and given you any feedback, or has that not happened yet?
I've had a guy I know who was an amateur wrestler. He's just actually picked up the fundraising for issue two as well. He really enjoyed it, you know, and he was giving me some feedback saying how much he'd enjoyed, you know, and he could tell that the storylines were very much what he would expect to see within a wrestling kind of world. But not that I know of, no. Okay. I must be honest, the one thing that I'm really bad at is probably pushing the book. I'm not very good at the whole marketing side of it. So, you know, I come on shows like this and I'm eternally grateful because it's an opportunity to just make people aware of it because I'm just not very good at that side of the marketing. And I just love creating. And you know what? Driven by sales and things. We're driven by the fact that, you know, we just love to make comics and books and things, and we just hope people enjoy them. But it would be nice to get them into the hands of more people, definitely. And I would love to see a wrestler's take on it, you know, because it's not in any way, I don't want people thinking any way that it's kind of, it's not poking fun at the sport, and it's not, you know, it is basically my love letter to wrestling, and it's homage to how I feel about wrestling and the enjoyment I get from it. And I used to get from it as well. And so it's not done in any way with a kind of, there's no kind of snide intent with there when I'm trying to be clever and poke fun. It's not, you know, as you may have seen from reading issue one, it's, I'd like to think there's a genuine affection in it. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see, but not that I know. Maybe somebody's listening to, maybe, you know, we don't know, somebody may be listening to this and want a copy, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
You know, and I'm going to back you up on that. Issue one is done in a very respectful manner. It is not revealing anything. It's not poking fun. It's not got any type of wink, wink, you know, hint, hint. It's done in a sincere way. Clearly, you're a fan that comes through off the page, Damien. And yeah, so definitely I agree. It is absolutely top notch in terms of presenting a fan's memory, so to speak.
And you try and build on it with you know, because obviously I've got older and I really enjoy watching documentaries about wrestling and, you know, and getting to read about, you know, things behind the curtain and stuff like that, you know, and that fascinates me now more than kind of modern wrestling, you know, the whole business side of it and then the way it was done and thing. I just find absolutely like fascinating and I love it. And when I watch replays of all wrestling, I watch it with a slightly different lens as well because of these things that, you know, in hindsight And I enjoy it more, actually. You know, I enjoyed it as a kid because it was just, it was incredible and exciting. But now I enjoy it because I appreciate the artistry of it more. And I appreciate the storytelling. And I appreciate, you know, it's the things you notice as you get older. So, yeah, I'm trying to build a little bit of that. And we touch on that a bit more in issue two, where I go a bit more into the kind of behind the scenes bit. But yeah, not in any way being disrespectful to it, not wishing to spoil anything. But it just touches on some of the, maybe the pressures that some of the wrestlers may be under to, you know, ensure that they stay at the top of the game and you know, just make sure that people keep buying tickets and merchandise, which is the important thing for GGA. They want to keep selling those pay-per-views and those tickets, you know.
Most definitely. Before we talk about issue two, I do have one final question. Damien, do you have some influences besides just wrestling? Because I'm getting that there's a little bit of a sci-fi feel to the book as well.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, I love comics and I've always loved comics. And you know, my favorite comics over here in the UK, we've got a thing called 2000 AD, which I'm sure some of your listeners will be familiar with. And it is the greatest British comic we've ever had. And it's still going after, I think it's 43 years now. So I've always loved science fiction. I've always loved comics. I was a huge fan of Star Trek. And that kind of influences GGA. This idea that, you know, the Gene Roddenberry idea that, you know, you can resolve conflict by not just going straight into war. You know, Kirk does everything before he'll punch someone in the face. It generally ends up with him punching somebody in the face, you know, and usually sleeping with his missus. But, you know, to give him credit, he'll try and resolve it peacefully first, you know. And that's another theme that comes through in GGA. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan as well. And I absolutely, like, adore Star Wars and Star Wars canon. I'm a real canon junkie. But, yeah, so there's all these other influences. And I knew at some point I'd bring them together. It was just having the confidence to do it, really, because, you know, creating a comic and putting it a bit like a podcast, when you create something that's artistic and you put it out there for people to either like or dislike and have an opinion of, you know, it takes a lot for us to do that. You know, it takes a lot of, not self-confidence, but you've just got to have a belief in what you're putting out. And even if I didn't like it, I wouldn't. I mean, there's other things that I've done I've never put out because I wasn't happy with them. But GGA's not one of them, thankfully, you know.
Well, let's talk about issue two. You have a Kickstarter campaign that is going on for issue two called, of course, Galaxy Grappling Alliance Solar Slam.
Yeah.
Very clever, Damien. Very clever. now, the one thing about the Kickstarter is it's already funded. It's 100% funded. But I definitely want the listeners to know you can still contribute if you'd like to. You can still get all the perks and all of the stretch goals. And all of that stuff as well. It's going on till the 28th of July, but could you mind maybe giving us some of the perks and some of the incentives that folks can get if they decide to donate to the project?
Yeah, so we set the target for this and the previous one really low by Kickstarter standards because I'm the artist, writer, and, you know, colorist and everything else. I don't need to really factor in the cost of paying someone to do the work. So what it allows us to do is basically just cover the cost of production and any additional time that I may need for some of the particular rewards. So last time we ran it, the most popular reward we had last time were bespoke wrestling posters, where what I would do is people that backed it could send me a photograph and I would draw them and I would draw their chosen opponent. And we'd do it in a GGA setting. But it meant that you had, you know, for example, you could be facing, you know, the Macho Man Randy Savage at Grapplemania on, you know, Planet, you know, Junkyard or wherever it may be. And I used to make these things up. But people went quite crazy for those. I ended up doing weeks and weeks of them. And the other thing we did, and I'm offering these again, are A4 color commissions, which are original pieces of art that I do. And again, you know, we had some of those, and I think I had a great Sid Vicious one. I really enjoyed doing that. Mankind, there was Roddy Piper. You know, so all the things you'd expect, but they were good. Because I actually trained, we both did actually, as portrait artists. So that's why a lot of our work is figuratively based, because that's kind of like where we came from. So this time round, I tried to refresh it a little bit. So I've replaced the posters with the trading cards. So people are getting all these things are hand-drawn. So there's a hand-drawn trading card that people can get. That's on one of the lower tiers. So that's quite cheap, really. There's a catch-up package where you can get issues 1 and 2. There's a bespoke VHS retro cover where basically what we'll do is I'll create a retro VHS cover. And it's a bit like the poster, but slightly different. So it'll be you versus your chosen opponent on a, you know, if you think about the old Coliseum video covers, it's very much in the style of that. And then I'm still doing the colour commissions as well, because obviously people do like a bit of original art. And we just try to keep the price down. I think, you know, I mean, the highest reward we've got, I think, is around about £65. And you get, I think you get basically everything in there. You know, you get both books and all the rewards. And that's probably about, what, $80, $75, $80 with the exchange rate. So we try and keep it as low as we can, because it's not about trying to make loads of profits, but it's just funding enough that we can do the next book or the next project. You know, yeah. So we that's why we do it. We just love doing it. And if people want to back it, and I really appreciate everyone that does back it, it just gives me that incentive to keep creating, you know. The first one was a gamble, paid off. And we're hoping the second one will be as successful, if not more.
You know, I'm just going to ask, because you mentioned it, you're kind of the one-man gang, so to speak, of this project. Was that done on purpose, or was it just kind of a happy accident?
No, because our first book, the first book that we did under Outline 2 Comics was a horror anthology. And what we did was we split that. So H did the first story in it, and I did a second story. And they were independent stories. And then after we did that issue, that went down really well. We didn't kickstart that. We just self-financed it and sold it at conventions. And we, you know, we got some really nice reviews on it and stuff. But we decided, because we both had our own projects that we wanted to pursue. So, you know, and again, because they were passion projects, and the wrestling was my passion project, and H had her own projects, which I'm sure she'll talk about. They were a bit more, one of them is a bit more semi-autobiographical and things. So, and we're trying to do things that can appeal to all ages as well. So, you know, we kind of say that the pre-mortis, the horror book is kind of really adults only. And GGA, I pitch it around about, you know, 8 years plus, because that's kind of like the age when most kids get into wrestling, I think. And it means I don't want to be too graphic in there, but you can't do it for all ages, really, because you end up having to miss some of the elements out. And then H has done a couple of things which are genuinely all ages. So we're trying to just, you know, give something to everyone, really, rather than, you know, you can get yourself pigeonholed into a particular genre, or, you know, you only do horror adult books, or you only do, you know, kids books. We're just trying to just explore what we feel like creating. That's the one advantage of being self-published, is you can do what you want. It's just hard work, because you haven't got people you can hand stuff off to. You've just got to get on with it and crack on, you know.
Helena, let's talk about some of your projects. The first one I'd like to talk about is the autobiographical piece called My Little Green Bike. Could you maybe give a little summary of what some of those tales are about?
Yeah, sure. So like Damien was saying, I had this idea of having something of my own kind of thing. Not that I dislike doing the book together. You know, it was a good way to get our foot in the door of self-publishing and, you know, getting comics done. So I'm quite a prolific writer. I do a lot of writing. It doesn't get published anywhere. I'm just a regular writer. I find writing very cathartic, and it's a bit like a blog that's not published. It's like a blog that I sit in a book and I write. I just find it a very mindful thing to do. And I've got all these stories from throughout my life, as it were. And at some point I would like to write a book. I have a book in me somewhere. I just need to find the time to do it. So I thought, in the interim, I might produce like a little, and it is only quite a small pamphlet, I suppose, if you prefer to call it. And my childhood revolved around this little green bike. It was my first bike that the stabilizers were taken off, and then I had lots of adventures on it. You know, in the days when you could let the kids go out without wrapping up in bubble wrap, they went off and they would come home when the sun goes down. That was it. You know, no mobile phones. There was no worries, and off I went. So basically, it's a number of stories. I can't remember how many. I think it's about 4 or 5 now, of basically slightly catastrophic events that happened with this little green bike. Normally involving some kind of injury to myself, but thankfully I survived them all. And so it's not really comic stripped. It isn't sort of panels. It's pictures that accompany little mini stories, essentially. but I've kept them in such a way that they could be read by kids or they could be read to by a parent if they wanted to read it, you know, to the kid. And if a kid's learning to ride a bike, they can sort of relate to it if they're currently learning to ride a bike, because I learned to ride that bike, you know, with stabilizer taken off and off I went. So it starts off, the first story is I won't go through all the stories, obviously, but the first story is about me, my dad teaching me to ride this bike when the stabilizer were taken off. And that was it then. That was my freedom. Then I could just go wherever I wanted on this bike. But involving cuts and scrapes and removal of skin off my fingers.
And that's very relatable, because I fell off my bicycle so many times, just cut up knees, cut up elbows. Yeah. I gave myself a concussion one time because that was pre-helmet. No. Yeah. Oh, good grief. You know, that was pre-helmet. There was no, in the late 70s, early 80s, there were no helmets. You just
rode. I'm amazed I didn't give myself a concussion, because I didn't have a helmet either. I just went off, and it was the case of my mum saying to me, I went very northern, and my mum saying to me, just be careful and don't go down that particular street, because some, you know, naughty people live down there. Don't go down that street. It's like, don't go past that number house. It's like, oh, okay. I had no idea that I was an adult. Why? But I now know why. But yeah, and off I went, and that was it. But yeah, the scrapes I got into and how I never like cut my head open or bang my head, I've no idea. I've come out of it okay, I think. So I've
always thought that learning to ride a bike is very much training for life, isn't it? Because you know, you metaphorically, we all fall off of bikes, like, all through life.
Every day.
You know, and you just sometimes you kind of stick a plaster on and get on with it and get back on, aren't you?
So absolutely.
It's quite interesting in that sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Helena and Damien for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. As I said, it's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, back issues, posters, comic book supplies, collectibles. And you know what? I know some of you might be worried that you might miss a single issue of your favorite comic. Well, guess what? World's Greatest has a fantastic pull system, so you don't have to worry about that ever again. So check them out online by going over to wgcomics.com, or you can find them on Facebook. Just search for @WGComics. Or better yet, if you're in the area, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And no matter how you interact with the folks at World's Greatest Comics, let them know that you heard about it from me, John Orlando, here on the PVD cast. Let's talk about another project, Helena. Drawing Dogs and Cats Made Easy. And I have to say, I've seen lots, especially in my comic book fandom, I've seen a lot of those how to draw the Marvel way, how to draw the DC way. But I've never quite seen one like this. So can I ask, what was the catalyst for doing one with animals?
Yeah, of course. Well, I won't drone on and on. I'll try and cut it fairly short for you. So essentially, I had set up some workshops, and these are physical workshops where I was going into a room and I was going to teach people in a room. And I'd set them up to start running in April this year, because as a sideline to being involved in writing and drawing comics, I do a lot of pet portraiture, do a lot of commissions with pet portraits. Even though I only started doing pet portraits just over a year ago as a gift for somebody. And then I put it on social media and it blew up. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love doing it. It's not a chore. I absolutely love doing it. So then I thought, you know what? People love drawing animals, but they don't know where to start. So I'll set these workshops up. So I set them all up. They were all ready to go. And then, of course, the pandemic hit. So, of course, quite rightly, they got cancelled. Nobody wants to be in a small, confined space with a potentially sick person in there. So then I thought, you know, I've got this itch. I feel a need to do something. So I started, I set up a YouTube channel. So on the YouTube channel, I put these mini tutorials up, which are probably the longest is about 12 minutes. They tend to be about 8 to 12 minutes long. And the little tutorials about how to draw a sausage dog, how to draw a long-haired cat. Dead simple, really simplistic lines, shapes, circles, ovals, join them together, and there you go. And I got such good feedback off them, where people were telling me they were using them for homeschooling their kids when they got to the art bit of homeschooling. What the heck are we going to do with them? So they go, tell you what, we'll go and look at YouTube. So they would do them. And then adults have been sending me drawings that they've been doing, and they've going, look what I've done. They were dead pleased that they've done this. And I thought, well, there's something in this. And then somebody asked me, do you do any kind of literature that would go with these tutorials? And I thought, great, okay. So then I got to it and basically created a little pamphlet with a, I think there's 9 cats and dogs in there. And I take you through step by step on how to do them. And then the package comes with 10 sheets of A5 paper and a pencil, and away you go. And it's been really, really popular. And of course, I've got these booklets now for when eventually we do come back to normality, as it were, and I do start running proper classes again. I'll have these booklets and I'll be able to hand them out as part of their ticket price, you know. So in a way, it's kind of, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the pandemic is a good thing by any stretch. What I'm going to say is the fact that we've had to stop everything, it's given me time to take stock of a different way of running the workshops in a way. So when we eventually do get there, and I can't see it happening this year, it's probably going to happen next year, when I start going and doing workshops, because I am a qualified teacher. That's kind of, I don't currently teach, but I'm a qualified teacher. So I wanted to use that teaching skills that I've got to basically impart knowledge, because I really enjoy being in front of a room full of people. And I love that light bulb going on when they go, I can do it. I love that about teaching.
You know, and I'm going to throw it out there that I too am not saying the pandemic's been a great thing, but for creative people, it has been a way to not only get more product or more episodes or more whatever out, but it's also making you think on your feet.
Totally. Yeah. Because, you know, when I had the first workshop set up, I'd set myself a target when I was going to start getting my session plans together and getting it all ready. And then I'll be honest, I felt like my sort of documentation, my stuff, probably I didn't feel in myself it was good enough. And of course, then everything stopped and everything got taken off the board. And I thought, now's my chance to really think about this. And then before you know it, I've got a really good set of stuff that I can go into any workshop now, wherever I do them, whenever I do them. And out of this as well, what I'm currently working on, I'm nowhere near there yet, is I'm going to set up a Patreon channel as well and start doing, you know, online. Because someone said to me, why don't you do some live streaming? And I thought, yeah, that's a thought. And then I thought, Patreon, I could do some of that and have some tiers in there where, you know, whatever you donate, you get access to, you know, like mini tutorials. If you subscribe for a higher one, you get full on tutorials. If you subscribe higher again, you'll get a live draw along with Helena kind of thing. So, you know, but I'm still in the process of figuring all that out and, you know, documenting it all, because I'm quite a prepared person. I like everything to be just so before I go ahead with stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Damien, you talked a little bit about pre-mortis. So maybe we'll let the listeners know, what exactly is that comic? As you mentioned, it is a horror comic, but could you maybe just give us a little summary of the tale?
Yeah, so there's two different stories in there, two independent stories. And the first one is done, written, drawn and lettered, colored, everything by H herself, Helena. So she did the first one. And the second one, the second half of the book is mine, which is a kind of, it's a continuation story. So there's going to be 3 or 4 parts to it. And that's kind of set in a, strangely enough, in a, when I was writing it, we were going through the whole Brexit debacle where we were looking at, you know, yeah. So it's set in this kind of world where, well, it's set in England and it's, you know, basically everything has gone to, how we say politely, gone a bit wrong, shall we say. It's the politest term I can use when it comes to Brexit, because the whole thing was just absolute farce. And so, you know, it's a very post-apocalyptic kind of feel to it, you know, that the whole country's been isolated. And it's got that kind of horror element where the main protagonist is being hunted down by people close to her, shall we say. So we'll leave it at that. So, it's an interesting book. And we're very proud of it, actually. The two styles are very different in there. And it's very different to GGA in the style I did it. It's more painterly than GGA is, because it was a different feel I was after. And it was the first comic we actually produced, wasn't it, properly? So, yeah, it's good. It had some good reviews. And if you like a bit of horror, and they're a bit kind of like, you know, sort of Tales from the Crypt-y kind of, you know, there's always a bit of a twist at the end and stuff. But we were working on issue 2 of that as well, so hoping that's going to be out in October, we're hoping for. We're aiming for kind of like a Halloween type launch for that. And I'll be continuing my story, The Lies That Bind, and you'll be writing a standalone story.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about the Omen to That podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Well, this is a new thing I've started doing, because, you know, you haven't got enough, have you? Yeah, it was very kind of you to shout out another podcast on your show, which is great, by the way. I've been listening since you got in touch. I've been catching up, and I've really enjoyed the show. And
thank you. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
No, genuinely, I'm not just saying it. It genuinely is enjoyable. There's many a podcast I've started to listen to and gone, you know, because it's either people just messing around a bit too much, which irritates me, or it's boring, you know, sometimes. And you get that, you know, you have interesting people, you talk about interesting things. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with Old Men to That, which is, it's a series of shows I'm just putting together purely to help entertain people in the current climate. And they're themed around kind of comics and the arts. So there's lots of things. They might not be directly related to comics, but a lot of the people I know are networked from within the comics world. So I have guests on there from that kind of world. And we've done the art of movie posters. We did, our first show was about old school wrestling. It was a bit odd, but we just thought we'll go with a bit of a bang. Got a couple of independent artist friends who are just crazy, like me, you know, crazy about the old 80s wrestling. We all had that same kind of, you know, we needed to talk about it, and we needed to talk, you know, who our favorite heels were, and, you know, any excuse to listen to Bobby Heenan and ravishing Rip Rude insulting people from, you know, the Midwest. It's got to be done. So that was the first one we did. And you know, and then we did, we've done the art of reviewing. We were supposed to record one about the art of teaching, which is teaching art and creative subjects. That's one. We had a bit of a technical issue, so that's been put back a bit. I'm doing the art of the con, which is about conventions. I've got two guys that run conventions in Britain coming and talking to me about, you know, that, because what I'm trying to do is get people to see what work goes into doing these things, you know. So we did out the movie poster, and that was fellow artists looking at them saying, what makes a great poster, you know? Why do some work, some don't work? And it was a really interesting conversation. And we actually, one of the guests, through the process of prepping, discovered something about an incredibly famous poster that none of us, and everyone that's listened to it so far, have come back and gone, I never noticed that. I never knew that was what this was. So it's been one of those things that we're really enjoying it, and we're just learning things. I'm learning things. I just like to talk to people who know, you know, about things they're doing. And it's had some good success, yeah. So I've got a few lined up. I'm going to keep recording them, and we'll just see how long it runs. But, yeah, but thanks for asking. I might be coming back here tomorrow, because we've been asked to do an update on the wrestling one, because so many people enjoyed it.
All right,
and I'd really like to get the perspective from you know, because we have a particular lens on wrestling where we see it through a very much a WWF, WCW lens. And, you know, since then I've been looking at, you know, Georgia wrestling and going back to the, you know, the Memphis stuff and all that. And it'd be lovely to talk to somebody like yourself, that's the kind of scholar that would be able to give us that insight to, you know, what it's like. And maybe even your take, if you've ever seen some British wrestling as well, that'd be interesting to see what you think of that. Because
I will certainly be down for that. So where can folks get the podcast, by the way, since we're talking about it?
Usual places. It's on Podbean, Apple Podcasts. I think it's on Spotify. I can't remember. It's on. I'm trying to add it to more and more carriers as they were. It's on the main ones at the moment. And you can also find a link on the Art92 website as well at the bottom under the social links. There's a link to the Old Men to That. I think it goes through to Podbean at the moment. Mm. But I'll be honest, I didn't realize there was that many sort of podcast capture outlets. You know, people keep, is it on this? And I'm like, I've never heard of it. I don't even know what it is.
Yep. I've been there. So let's just talk about your background in art for both of you. Were you as kids constantly drawing, constantly coming up with, you know, different tales, superheroes, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I was drawing all the time. I wasn't one for playing with dolls, and, you know, I did have dolls and things, but I wasn't one for playing with dolls. I was either out on my little green bike, I was climbing trees, because very much a tomboy, or I was drawing. And I always had, there was always paper, always pencils in the house. And although I wasn't kind of into comics as a kid, I mean, when I say I wasn't into comics, we'd have like the Beano and Dandy in the house and things like that, but I wasn't into the superhero comics. I had no idea they existed until I got older. But even then, I would still draw comic strips, you know, with little stories in them and things like that. But I would also draw still lives. I would draw things in the house. I would draw people. So I was always, always drawing, essentially. And then I wanted to take that further when I'd finished my exams in school. And I went off to art college and did art college for a couple of years. So it was, when you speak to a lot of people who go to art college, I'm not sure about in the States, but certainly over here, oftentimes people will say art college was absolutely pointless. They learned more when they left art college than when they were in art college. So it's the amount of people we've spoken to, because they very much in art college, and I don't know, it might be very different now, but in art college, they tended to try and narrow you down and try and make you work in a very specific way. And if you try to deviate outside of that, they didn't like it. They had a very regimented way of doing it. And the only thing I really found useful in art college was life drawing. I found life drawing absolutely wonderful. And that set me in on a really good path for learning to draw the face, learning to draw the figure, learning to draw the human form, which was really set me up for your future, really. And you were the same, weren't you?
Yeah, I was the same. I mean, I always drew comics. You know, I loved comics. And I used to sit and I was on a podcast last night. I was talking about, you know, my first comics, and my dad used to work in the mines. And so I didn't see him throughout the week because he was working night shifts and stuff. So as a kid, you know, you'd see him at weekends. And every Saturday, I'd wake up and there was a copy of 2000 AD, which is probably a bit old for me at the time, but I just loved it, you know. And I used to sit and devour it and read it, and then I'd read it again. And then I'd just spend the rest of the day just sitting and copying the drawings from it, you know. And some of the great artists from Britain at the time were drawing in there, you know, your Brian Bollins and things like that, you know, beautiful artwork, even today. So that got me, and I used to create my own comics as a kid, and I used to create them about anything, you know. I used to invent, you know, superheroes based, you know, quite obviously on other superheroes. We've all done it. And then I'd draw comics about, strangely enough, I used to draw comics about wrestling. I used to draw comics about the NFL. I'd draw, you know, anything that captured my imagination. I used to think, I can turn this into a comic. And I used to do it with films as well. I can remember trying to draw films. You know, I'd see a film and I'd think, I can draw that. And I'd try and, from memory, remember what happened and draw the panel. So it's always been there. But in art college, it's funny, comic book illustration in British art, well, in most of the schools, but particularly in art schools, is completely disregarded as an art form. You know, it's seen as the lowest of the low. And, you know, the fact that, you know, if that's what you wanted to do and you wanted to move into that kind of illustration as a career, they just weren't interested in you, to be honest. And strangely enough, it changed, and it all changed around about the time of the early 90s, when things like Arkham Asylum and things like that started to come out and be popular. And the graphic novel, the rise of the graphic novel, mm-hmm. turned a lot of people's kind of attention to go, actually, you know, this is artwork, isn't it? I mean, if you ever look at Dave McKean's work in Arkham Asylum, I mean, we were lucky enough. We went to an exhibition last year in London, and they had some of the pages from Arkham in there. And like a fool, I didn't know. And same with the Sandman covers, that a lot of them were... they were constructed out of collage. You know, that's the thing. How does he draw that lace like that? It's incredible, you know. And when you go and you see that, you know, he used to put the lace on and paint over it. And the one I always remember in Arkham is with the Scarecrow and the sort of Hessian face, you know, the face cloth, the back for the mask. And I used to think, that's incredible. And it's because he'd actually collaged it in and then worked over it. And, you know, it's beautiful. It's just a piece of art when you look at it, as I think most comics are anyway. But so that's my background. And I dropped out for 20 years. I didn't do any artwork at all. You know, art, life gets in the way, doesn't it? You change your plans. And I just stopped drawing completely. And it was only a couple of years ago I got back into it. And it was literally about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I started drawing again. And now my one regret is I wished I'd carried on all those years, even if it was just sketching and stuff, because, you know, I just think, how much further along would I have been in creating things if I'd have kept going? But, you know, hey, it is what it is. And you just got to look forward and make up for lost time, really, and keep going. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I saw that you two have quite a few appearances upcoming, hopefully. Do you want to maybe give a quick few shout outs to some of those places you might be here in the end of 2020, if everything, fingers crossed, and everything clears up?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we're actually part of a virtual comics, a virtual convention, as it were, which the website's just gone live, but all the events and the panels and the guests are all happening in October. And that's the Lakes International Comic Art Festival. Yeah. So it's LICAF as the acronym. So we've just been involved in an online, a virtual convention that was based in the Netherlands last weekend. And that was really good, you know, and it's a really nice way. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong. We do love a convention. We love meeting people. We love having that crack with people and people picking up books and us going to see other people and pick up their books and chat. But the next best thing is having something online where people, you can talk in chat rooms and, you know, you can kind of look at people's websites. And we saw the traffic go up on our website, which is quite nice because that's what you want. You want to, you know, people to come and have a look at your stuff. And then after that, we've got...
Yeah, the next two that we've got in the books, although who knows, is there, actually there's a wrestling convention that we have. And it's only been going a couple of years and it's the only like big wrestling convention that we have in the UK. And they tend to get a lot of the old WWF and WCW stars over. So, you know, they've got quite a few names coming this year. And we've got a table there because it's quite strange because they got in touch with us about being there and stuff. And it's nice because I don't think there'll be many wrestling comics on sale. So you never know, you know. But that'll be us selling original art as well and taking some commissions and things. So we're hoping that might go ahead. It's kind of the weekend of Halloween. So who knows, you know, it may be still a bit too early, but we'll have to wait and see.
It's whether or not the guests can come over, because if there's American guests coming over, it's whether or not they're going to be able to fly and they might have to quarantine and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Part of me is just hoping it does go ahead, just because of the guests they've got. You know, they've got like Steiner Brothers coming and things like that, you know, and they've got some really good names attending. So it would be interesting, but only if it's safe. And if it isn't, then I'm sure they'll make the right decision. And then the one after that was actually, it should have been earlier this month, which is a Ghostbusters convention, which was originally going to fall right around the time that Afterlife hit, right around the time that the Ghostbusters art book was released, which I've got a piece of artwork in as well. This is great. And then it all went a bit south. So that's been pushed back to November tentatively. But, you know, we'll see. And again, you know, you've got to be realistic about these things and you've got to accept that even if some of the shows do go ahead, we're going to review our personal situation. How safe do we feel about going? And, you know, because I'd rather take a little financial hit than risk our health or the health of other people. So, you know, but we'll see. We're still hoping that we might see something. But other than that, most of the cons in Britain this year have been, they've either been turned virtual or they've just been moved to 2021. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame, you know, but it's the right thing to do, much like yourselves, I would imagine, where a lot of the big cons, San Diego, et cetera, have gone virtual.
A lot of them have been virtual or been pushed to 2021. Yeah, and there's been a few, like, individual appearances where a creator may come to a comic book shop and, you know, only 15 people at a time, masks, please don't shake hands, you know, and that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, we're all in the same boat. It doesn't matter where you are in the world.
Absolutely.
We're all dealing with this.
All affected.
And you've got to stay safe. You've got to keep other people safe. That's the thing, isn't it? It's not just about yourself sometimes. You know, you've got to think about the impact you could have on other people. And that's very important to us, that, as I'm sure it is to yourself and other people listening. You know, it's not just about you sometimes. I mean, yes, you look after yourself and you look after your families, but there is an impact that your behavior can have on people around you, and you've really got to think about that before you start just, you know, throwing caution to the wind and saying, let's all go to the beach, like Britain seems to be doing at the moment in the middle of a heat wave. You know, our government seems to think we've ended the lockdown, so they told everyone to go out and party, and then they tell them off after for going out and being on the beach, and like, well, what do you think was going to happen? So, you know, we're staying indoors and we're just carrying on as we were, you know, we're fine for now, and you know. But yeah, it'd be nice to get back to a bit more of a social element, you know, with conventions and that. But I do think they're going to be very different moving forward. I do think we'll learn lessons from this, I hope, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Kickstarter. It's going on from now until July 28th. As we've talked, it's already funded, but you still can donate. You still can chip in. You can still get some of the great perks and incentives. Just go to kickstarter.com and look for Galaxy Grappling Alliance, correct?
Yep, that's it. You can also search on things like wrestling and it pops up, you know, things like that. I've tried to make sure that all the keywords are in there for people to find it. And you can also look on, you know, if you look on our social feeds, you know, obviously, as you can imagine, I'm mentioning it now and then, you know, I may drop the odd tweet about it. And yeah, you know, it's funded and it's well funded. So there's no danger of it. You know, I can't see that many people pulling out that we would be unfunded again. So yeah, it's a pretty safe bet. And as I say, you know, we're trying to do even things like just cheap PDF catch up deals for people because of, you know, if people sometimes we have the postage in the UK is very expensive. You know, it's just like most things, to be fair. And sometimes the postage can be more than the books. So we're trying to keep everything. And we're not overcharging on postage or anything like that. We're really trying to keep it as close as it can be, just maybe a little bit under. And we just absorb the difference. But yeah, lots of rewards on there. You know, they start at a few dollars and work up. And you can have a look at what you can get. There's examples online and stuff like that. So if you're interested in a bit of sci-fi grappling, then, you know, give it a go.
Well, let's talk about those social media accounts before we close up shop. Where can folks find you on Twitter, Instagram, website, all that jazz?
So we've tried to keep it the same throughout all the social media platforms because as we get older, it's difficult to remember these things, you know? Yeah. So
you're lucky if you remember to put your pants on at our age, you know
what
I mean?
So
multiple social media handles.
No. Especially when it's so hot, it fries the brain, you know? We're not used to this kind of heat. So we do have our own individual accounts, but basically you can spur off Art92 to find our individual accounts. So we're basically Art92 on everything, and that's all words. So it's, you know, Art92. So that's on Instagram, Twitter. We've got a Facebook page as well.
Art92.com
is the main one. And then you've got the buttons on there that take you off to social media as well. Yeah. So, you know, if you wanted to follow our personal accounts, they are pretty boring. There's art in there. And for me, it's running because I'm a big runner. So it's always posting about running. So it's better to go to Art92 and you get all your art and stuff there. So,
well, there you go. Guys, thank you so very much for joining me. Is there any last words that you would like to share with the listeners?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for having us on because
it's the
first podcast
thank
that
you.
We've been on in the States. So,
oh wow,
this is our US debut. Yeah. So you know that's why we were so excited. Yeah. It's so cool that you reached out.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and we do genuinely do enjoy the show as well. And I guess, you know, I just want to say to people, you know, I mean, it's difficult times, isn't it? But can we all just maybe take a breath and just be kind to each other? You know, I mean, it's the same in this country as it is with yourselves, where there's a lot of things going on and there's a lot of situations coming around. And you know, we do need to stand with other people that are being persecuted. I really do believe that. You know, I do believe that you should stand shoulder to shoulder with people, maybe not shoulder to shoulder at the current climate, but you should stand with people metaphorically. And, you know, let's just be kind to each other and let's just take a moment to just think, you know, about our actions because they have serious consequences. And that'd be it, really. Not preachy, but just, you know, I was always taught by my mum, just be a good person. That's all she ever asked of us. Just be a good person. And I've always carried that. And I've always tried to say that to other people, you know, just do right by other people.
Yeah.
Well, once again, Damien, Helena, Art92, thank you very, very much for coming on the PVD cast. I'm so happy that you had the opportunity to talk with me. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with the folks behind Art92, Helena and Damien, and definitely check them out online. Just go to the website. I'm sure that's the easiest place to get all the social media and all of the YouTube information and whatnot. And again, that website is Art92, and that is all word, ArtNinetwo.com. And everything we talked about it will be right there at your fingertips. And sincerely and honestly, what a great and delightful time I had speaking to those two. So with that being said, I need to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you would like to talk to me about this episode or another episode or whatnot. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can always shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook page at PVDcast. And you probably could even leave me a message over on the Instagram feed for this podcast. That, of course, at PVDcast. And maybe you want to tell some folks about this podcast. Well, let me inform you of where you can tell them to go. You can go to PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of the major podcasting platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Pod Paradise, iHeartRadio, the Radio.com app. Basically, go to your favorite podcast platform, type in PVDcast in the search bar. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And when you do, please rate and review, because that helps me out tremendously. And subscribe so that you never, ever miss an episode. And you know what? One other favor I'm going to ask? Tell some folks about it. As you know, word of mouth is one great, great advertising tool. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I think the only other thing I need to remind you about is, of course, check out the PVDcast every Monday night at 9:30 on Redline Radio. And you can find it by going to RedlineRadioLLC.com or search Facebook, Redline Radio LLC. Or again, if you're one of those Android phone users, go to Google Play Store, download the Redline Radio LLC app, and you can take the station with you wherever you go. And if you're like me, you're an iPhone guy, well, that app's coming real, real soon. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank each and every one of you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.